تاریکی. تو میدونی یا من میدونم و خونه که این قربت همین امشب رو مهمونه، صبح فردا دوباره هر دامون راضی از این تکرار بیهوده، از این بازی پی خوشبختی میگردیم، پی فردا میونه کنه. انگار صدای تیک تیک ساعت، همه بغضای دلتنگی فراموش میکنیم راحت، به هم بر میخوریم هر شب، عجب دنیای کوچیکی، چه زود گم میکنیم من با عجب بست تاریکی. تو میدونی یا من میدونم و خونه که این قربت همین امشب رو مهمونه، صبح فردا دوباره هر دامون راضی از این تکرار بیهوده، از این بازی پی خوشبختی میگردیم، پی فردا میونه
خب بریم ببینیم این ملانی داستان عاشق تر شدنش رو تعریف کرده، قضیه چیه؟ برمیگردیم.
دوباره میشم همونی که میخوای، من عاشقت هستم، دوباره میگم من با تو عاشق تر میشم.
خب بعد از شنیدن این آهنگ پر انرژی برگشتیم با شما. میدونین که رقص و موسیقی از بهترین و زیباترین هنرهایی هستن که تا به حال بشر بهشون پرداخته. ما امروز یک مهمان خیلی عزیزی رو داریم روی خطمون که از شهر همیلتون با ما همراه هستن. اسم ایشون خانم مریم واسقی هست، 19 ساله. در حال حاضر ایشون در 2 رشته در دانشگاه مکمستر دانشجو هستند و در عین حال تشکیل دهنده گروه رقص بهار در سال 2013. این گروه از سپتامبر 2013 مشغول به کار شده و خیلی برامون جالب بود که یه دختر خانم به این جوونی از 2 سال پیش شروع کرده یه همچین فعالیت هنری بسیار با ارزشی رو و تونسته که نظر جامعه ایرانی رو و هنرمندان و کسانی که علاقه دارن رو جلب بکنه و خیلی برامون جالب بود که باشون یه صحبتی داشته باشیم روی خط رادیو پارسان و بیشتر باشون آشناشیم و فعالیتایی که دارن انجام میدن. مریم جان سلام میکنم بهت، امیدوارم که صدای ما رو بشنوی.
سلام، خوب هستین؟
متشکرم، مرسی. من یک مقدمه خیلی کوتاهی گفتم از تشکیل گروه رقص بهار توسط شما که همونطور که با هم صحبت می‌کردیم هم تشکیل دهنده این گروه بودین و بانی این گروه و هم کارگردان هنریش. من می‌خواستم سوالا رو و گفتگو رو به این شکل باد آغاز بکنم که انگیزه تو از تشکیل این گروه رقص چی بود و هدف اصلی که شما دنبال میکنین اون هدف چی بود از تشکیل این گروه رقص؟ چون خیلی هم خوب ادامه دادین و بیوقفه همچنان مشغول کار بودین.
بله، من سلام عرض میکنم به همه. میخواستم بگم که من وقتی که اومدم مکمستر متوجه شدم که مکمستر ایرانیاش زیاد با هم دیگه متحد نیستن و کار فرهنگی زیاد انجام نمیدن. بعد به این صورت شد که تصمیم گرفتم یک گروهی درست کنم که همه ایرانی های مکمسته رو دور هم دیگه جمع کنم و با این راه فرهنگ و رقص و هنر ایرانی رو به کسایی که با این آشنا نبودن نشون بدم.
آفرین، ایده واقعا هم چی از به هنر و رقص و اینا بهتر که بتونه ایرانی ها رو. میخواستم بگم همچین فکر نکن فقط تو همیلتون بوده، کلن هیچ، خیلی ایرانی ها به اون صورت دور هم جمع نمیشن، ولی این هنرهایی مثل رقص و موسیقی و اینا بهانه خیلی خوبیه که شروع کردین. پس هدف اصلی در واقع دور هم جمع کردن ایرانی ها بوده از این قضیه؟
در اصل هدف اصلی این بودش که فرهنگ ایرانی ها، چون درست همیلتون ایرانی ها خیلی تعدادشون کم نسبت به تورنتو و شهر بزرگتر،
درست،
و خیلی اصلا نمیدونن که ایرانی ها کسایی هستن که رقص دارن، موسیقی دارن و واسه شون ما با تو پرفورمنس همون که دانشگاه داشتیم واسه همه خیلی عجیب بودش که مثلا دختر ایرانی میرقصن. آیا مثلا ایران هر نقطهش یک کاستوم مختلف، یه لباس مختلف، یه رقص مختلف داره؟
دقیقا.
و در کنار اون خب 100% متحد کردن بچه ها کنار هم دیگه بوده و حالا من میخواستم این رو گسترشش بدم و کامیونیتی همیلتون و اطراف همیلتون رو میخواستم با دانشگاه خودمون که مکمستره کامباین بکنم و اینا رو با هم دیگه متحد بکنم.
خب چقدرم جالب مریم جون، گفتی که خواستی کامیونیتی یا در واقع انجمنی رو تشکیل بدی. واسه تشکیل دادنش دقیقا از کجا شروع کردی؟
من وقتی که اومدم همیلتون با بچه ها و البته من وقتی اومدم لیسانس هم میخواستم شروع کنم، سال اول دانشگاه بودم، ولی چون یه تعدادی از بچه ها رو تو سالای بالاتر مثل دکترا و ارشد میشناختم باهاشون صحبت کردم و گفتم که بچه خب من الان یه مدت خیلی طولانی طبعا 8 سال رقص کار میکنم و خب موسیقی هم کار میکنم، ولی شما خودتون به چه چیزی علاقه داریم؟ یه کار گروهی با هم دیگه انجام بدیم، یه چیزی که بتونیم یه جشنواره های موسیقالچرال دانشگاهمون بتونیم ایران رو رپرزنت بکنیم. و خب بچه ها به خیلی به رقص علاقه داشتن و همون جور شد که من مثلا سپتامبر اومده بودم دانشگاه، بعد 1 هفته ما گروه رقص رو شروع کردیم و همه به همت بچه هامون بودش، کسی که علاقه داشتن و خیلی از همیتا میتونم بگم که تقریبا 99% بچه‌ای که اومدن هیچ اکسپرینس قبلی از دست نداشتن و همه از صفر شروع کردن و با علاقه و تایمشون و زمانی که گذاشتن با اینکه درس و کار داشتن باعث شدن که این کار شدنی باشه.
خیلی هم خوب. بین این افرادی که استقبال کردن هم آقایون هم خانوما بودن دیگه، درسته؟
نه، تقریبا میشه گفتش که اولش ما گروه رقص با اولین اجرامون رو با فقط دخترها شروع کردیم، تقریبا 13 نفر بودیم اکتیو ممبر، ولی به مرور زمان تعدادمون بیشتر شد و سر کم چون فیدبکی که اول گرفتیم از پرفورمنس اولمون اون بود که مرد ایرانی آیا نمی‌رقصن و ما گفتیم چرا می‌رقصن، ولی
فقط خجالت می‌کشن.
یکم می‌خواستم همینو، خجالتی یعنی خورده
و همین شد که من سعی کردم برای پرفورمنس دوممون که توی تورنتو بود در جشنواره ایرانیای تورنتو اونجا پسرها رو اضافه کردم، ولی فقط سه تا پسر.
ولی به مرور دیدی که آقایون میتونن دست کمی از خانوما نداشته باشن، درسته؟
الانم سعی کردیم کلان نگه داریم همونو، ولی باز استقبال آقایون از رفت خیلی کمه، مثلا تقریبا 17 نفر به 3 نفر و خب این باعث میشه که دستان هم یه ذره تنگتر باشه توی کوریوگرافی کردن رقصا.
آقایون بشه تابید. مریم جان یه سوال دیگه، خب این اعضای گروه بیشتر تو چه محدوده سنی هستن؟ آیا اصلا شرایط خاصی هم برای به قول معروف بازه سنیشون هست یا به روی همه بازه؟
درسته، من خودم جوان ترین ممبر گروه هستم که 19 سالمه. البته این دفعه دوست داشتم که یه دختر خانم 7 سالم به رفتمون اضافه بکنیم برای مثلا یه چیزی که جدید میخوام امتحان بکنم و هستم بچه ها همه سن تا تقریبا فکر کنم بزرگترین ممبرمون 35 سالشه تقریبا و ما هنوزم من هیچ مشکلی ندارم که ممبرای جوانتر یا بزرگتر رو به گروه هم اضافه بکنم، فقط به خاطر اینکه خب ما تو دانشگاه هستیم و این رنج سنی بیشتر هستش.
چه جالبه اتفاقاً. آره به نظر منم این خیلی جالبه که چون هم میتونین رقصهای مختلفی رو طراحی بکنین، هم این که خب آدم ها بیشتر تشویق میشن که یعنی فکر نمی کنن که حالا چون از یه سنی بالاتر یا پایین ترن نمیتونن توی این فعالیت شرکت بکنن. ولی سوالی که بر من پیش میاد اینه که تو خودت چون خودت هم آموزش ها رو انجام میدی و به هر حال گروه رو خودت دور هم جمع کردی و داری مدیریت میکنی، شما خودت مریم جون چه جوری رقص و آموزش دیدی؟ آیا آموزشت اینجا بوده یا جای خاصی مثلا معلم خاصی داشتی؟ و اینکه انواع رقصایی که الان انجام میدین در گروهتون چیه؟
درسته، من خودم رقص رو وقتی که خیلی کوچک بودم خیلی علاقه داشتم، من هم خواهرم، ما دوتایی تقریبا فکر کنم میشه گفتش که 7 سالمون بود که رقص آذری، چون ما آذری هستیم،
درست
اون رقص رو از مامانمون یاد گرفتیم تقریبا، اونجا بود که یه ذره علاقه پیدا کردیم. بعدش طبعا 9 سالمون بود اومدیم کانادا، اینجا عضوی گروه رقص آذری شدیم و رقص آراز رو شروع کردیم با اونا به تمرین کردن. بعد یه مدتی گذشت گروه رقص خودمون رو با یه سری از بچه های مکمستر، موقع من هنوز در هایسکول بودم، با بچه های مکمستر یه گروه رقص 5 نفری درست کردیم. بعد از اونجا دیگه تونستیم پرفورم کنیم و اینا و من بعد از اینکه گروه آذری رو دیگه یه ذره کمتر تمرین کردم تصمیم گرفتم که رقص دیگه هم از گروه دیگه یاد بگیرم چون خیلی علاقه داشتم. در همین با گروه گیلکور رقص گیلکی رو یه ذره کار کردم، بعد با یکی از دوستای خیلی خوبم که واقعا این هنرمنده توی تورنتو ما شروع کردیم خودمون یه گروه به اسم دختران قاجار تشکیل دادیم.
چه اسم جالبی.
اینجا بود که من رقص دوری یاد گرفتم، قاجار یاد گرفتم، بابا کرم و رقص تهرانی. و از اونجا شد که من اینا رو این اکسپریانس ها رو جمع کردم و وقتی که اومدم همینطور همون چیزه که قبلا کار کرده بودم و به بچه ها یاد دادم. حالا مهمتر از همه اینه که من سعی میکنم چیزه که یاد میگیرم و خودم یه تاشه یه چیز شخصی بهشون اضافه میکنم و یونیکشون میکنم که مثلا با بقیه فرق کنه، با کاری که قبل انجام دادم فرق بکنه.
درسته. خب این خیلی جالبه. پس در واقع شما تمام این انواع رقصا رو آموزش میدین و کار میکنین توی گروهتون. بعد سوالی که بر من پیش میاد، چون هر کدوم از این مدل‌های مختلف رقص خب لباس مخصوص خودش هم میطلبه دیگه، نوع پوشش خودش رو داره، کار طراحی و دوخت و آماده سازی لباس رو کی انجام میده تو گروهتون؟
ما اتفاقا خب لباس یکی از بزرگترین مشکلات گروهمونه و من خب مثلا خودمون تا جایی که وسعمون برسه یه سری از لباس ها رو میدیم میدوزن تو ایران برامون و اونجوری میاد، ولی خب وقتی که اون لباس های مثلا ترمنت 4-5 نفر رو میشه اون کار انجام داد. ولی وقتی که من اومدم مکمسه و گروه هم خیلی بزرگ شد، تقریبا به 20 نفر تبدیل شد دیگه، چون بچه ها دانشجو هستن وسعشون نمیرسه که مثلا بیشتر از 50 یا 60 دلار بذارن که لباس تهیه کنیم، برای همون بعضی نمیتونیم و برای همون بعضی وقتا مجبور میشدیم که خودمون پارچه بگیریم و لباس ها رو خودمون تو خونه بدوزیم و مثلا حالا بعد چرخ حیاتی هم نداشتیم با دست میدوختیم لباس ها رو یه سشت ساده و مثلا بعضی وقتا هم سعی میکردیم که از بیرون لباس میگرفتیم اینا رو دورش رو تزیین میکردیم و یه حالت مثل کامباین میکردیم و لباس تمام یه جور سنتی میشد.
درست.
و یه سری هم اونجوری پرفورم کردیم. حالا ما چون که باز نمیخوام که لباس همون تکراری باشه، همه شخصی جدید داریم به گروهمون اضافه میکنیم، خیلی دوست داریم که اگه کسی هست دوست داره اسپانسر بشه کمکمون کنه که مثلا پارچه ها رو ما تهیه بکنیم برامون بدوزن یا برای از مثلا مالی ما رو سپانسر بکنن که بتونیم پارچه بگیریم.
درسته، متوجهم.
خب صحبت هزینه ها شد مریم جان، من خود به خود یه عادتی دارم اینجور موقع ذهنم میره به سمت مسائل اقتصادی، میبخشید البته این سوال برام اصفهانی
آرشمون آخه مریم جان
دقیقاً. دیگه نیلوفر یه بارش کرد راحتش کرد جان کلامو گفت. خیلی دوست داشتم بدونم اعضای گروهتون برای آموزش رقص هزینه‌ای میپردازن و عضویتش به قول معروف هزینه بر هست، چطوریه؟
نه، هزینه عضو گروه رایگان هستش.
خب گفتم شاید یکی از دلایلی که
خیال آرش اصلا یه نفس راحتی کشید الان اینو تو گفتی.
من دوست دارم که من خیلی این برام مهمه، چون خودم
برای ما مهمه
در کلاس های زخم خیلی وقتا مثلا این خانوادم نمیتونستن این پول پروباید بکنن که من کلاس های مختلف رو برم. این کلاس های لحظتن که میدونین خیلی بسیار گرونه، مثلا اگه بخواییم چیز خصوصی کلاس خصوصی بگیرین. من خودم بیشتر از لحظه که یاد گرفتم و دوستای خوبم و مثلا دور لحظه آزد که بودم اونا بدون هزینه به من یاد میدادن. من تنها هزینه که گذاشتم وقتی که ایران میرفتم تا به سونا میخواستم یه ذره بیشتر لحظه آذری یاد بگیرم، میرفتم که ایران استاد داشتم اونجا، خب یه ذره پول پی میکردم، ولی اومدم که اینجا نه، اصلا اینجور نبود. و همون دوستم که بقیه مشکلات مالی یه کانسترین نباشه باشن که نتونن رقص رو یاد بگیرن، همین که علاقه داشته باشن و اون زمان رو بذارن، اون خودش برمه خیلیه.
خب برای سایر هزینه های گروهتون در واقع خب چه تصمیمی داری؟ آیا هیچ منبعی هم برای تامین اونها پیدا کردی یا همونطوری که گفتی در واقع جویای هر نوع اسپانسر یا حامی هستید؟
درسته. من خب نه، خیلی دوست دارم که اسپانسر پیدا بکنیم، چون که فعلا که کسی ما رو ساپورت مالی نکرده. ما حتی وقتی که جاهایی که میریم پرفورم میکنیم شخصا دوست نداریم که پول بگیریم به خاطر پرفورمنس، چون داریم یه کار فرهنگی انجام میدیم. و بچه ها خب چون بچه های دانشگاه هستن میگن که ما دوست نداریم که پی بشیم که بریم درخصیم و این یه جلوه خیلی بدی داره برای ما. ولی الان مثلا من امسال گروه لحظمون رو توی دانشگاه مکمستر با من آفیشلی مکمستر ایرانیان دنس اسوسییشن سابقش کردم، تأسیس کردم و امیدوارم که سال دیگه دانشگاه بتونه کمی کمکمون بکنه، ولی تقریبا تا 300 تا 400 دلار میتونن ما رو کمک بکنن و ما خب هزینه‌مون از این خیلی بیشتره، ولی سعی میکنیم که از بقیه کمک بگیریم تا جایی که میتونیم از سرویس های رایگان دانشگاه مثل جا استفاده بکنیم در تمرینامون که هزینه ها بیاد پایین تر.
اتفاقا خیلی کار قشنگی کردین. حالا به جز قسمت این که بتونین از بودجه استفاده کنین، همین ثبت کردنش به عنوان یه ارگانایزیشن توی دانشگاه واقعا کار قشنگ و با ارزشی بوده که انجام دادین. مریم جو، شما گفتی که خب یکی از هدفاتون و یکی از فعالیت‌هایی که دارین اینه که در فستیوال‌های مالتی کالچورال یا فستیوال‌هایی که گردهمایی‌های ایرانی یا جشنواره‌های مختلف شرکت داشتین. اخیراً در چه فستیوالایی شرکت داشتین یا قراره که شرکت بکنین در آینده نزدیک؟
درسته، ما تلان توی تورنتو پرفورمنس داشتیم توی فستیوال هر سال ایرانی های تورنتو و امسال هم میخواییم که تو همون فستیوال دوباره اجرا داشته باشیم و فستیوال اینترنشنال که از همه کشورها میان و رقص و فرهنگ خودشون نشون میدن دوباره تو ملتمن 8 آگست پرفورمنس خواهیم داشت و خود تو دانشگاه هم که هستیم یه هر سال یه دونه تقریباً طرف های نزدیک های ای تو دانشگاه مک‌مستر یه دونه ایونت خیلی بزرگ هست که دوباره از همه کشورها میان غذاهاشون رو به نشون میدن و رقصاشون نشون میدن، فرهنگ صنایع دستیشون رو. و ما اونجا هم هر سال از 2 سال پیش گروه رقص شروع کردیم برنامه داشتیم.
درسته. من یه سوالی که الان به ذهنم رسید این بود که شما توی خب مثلا این جشنواره‌هایی که میرین و احیانا گروه‌های دیگه‌ای که در زمینه هنری فعالیت می‌کنن، تا حالا شده که همکاری با گروه‌های موسیقی ایرانی داشته باشین برای اجرای رقص با موسیقی زنده یا همیشه با موسیقی ضبط شده شما می‌رقصین؟
درسته. ما تا الان هر دوتاش بوده، یعنی خودمون که شروع میکنیم، یعنی میخوان که پرفورمنس آماده کنیم، 100% از آهنگای ضبط شده استفاده میکنیم. ولی بعضی وقتا پیش میاد که جایی مثلا ما توی دانشگاه رایرسون برای شب یلدا پرفورمنس داشتیم امسال و اونجا یه گروه موسیقی آورده بودن که میخواست یه سری از موسیقی سنتی ایرانی رو اجرا بکنه و به شانس همون آهنگی بودش که ما هم میخواستیم باهاش اجرا داشته باشیم. در همون سعی کردیم که با گروه موسیقی زنده با اونا تنظیم داشته باشیم و با اونا اجرا کنیم.
درسته. خب خیلی جالبه. من یه سوال دیگه ایم که برام پیش اومد این بود که تا حالا شده که توی این برنامه‌ای که اجرا کردین به خصوص در جشنواره که مالتی کالچورال بودن، کسایی از ملیت غیر ایرانی براشون جالب بوده باشه و اومده باشن سراغتون خواسته باشن رقص و یاد بگیرن؟
تا الان ما توی دانشگاه که بودیم به خاطر اینکه خیلی همه یه جمع دوستانه بودیم بیشتر ایرانی ها بودن که جوان شدن، ولی حالا به خاطر اینکه گروه رو رجیستر کردیم من میخوام اینو یه ذره گسترشش بدم و اصلا دیگه ممبرای ملیت دیگه هم قبول بکنیم توی گروهمون. تا الان ما همیشه مثلا اوپن بودیم کسی دیگه هم بیاد، ولی خب کسی نمیشنید بیاد راجب گروه همون به جز ایرانی ها. ولی خب یه ممبر داریم از کسی که تو اندرگراد هستش که الان کاناداییه و خیلی علاقه داره. ما خیلی مثلا تو فیسبوکمون یه پیج فیسبوک داریم به عنوان مک‌مستر ایرانیان دانس اسوسییشن که از اون طریق خیلی ها به ما مسیج زدن از دانشگاه که دوستان که جوین بشن و ایرانی نبودن.
درست.
و ما داریم سعی میکنیم که از سال دیگه این هم داشته باشیم به خاطر اینکه هدف اصلی ما دوباره همون چیزی که ما میخوایم فرهنگمون رو بشناسیم به کسی که چیزی از ایران نمیدونن.
درست.
بسیار خیلی کار قشنگیه مریم جان که همونطور که خودت گفتی فرهنگ ما رو داری به این طریق به مردم دنیا معرفی میکنی و حتی ایرانی هایی که در اینجا بزرگ شدن و خب تا حدود زیادی با سنت ها و آداب یه مقدار متاسفانه بیگانه شدن. اما صحبت از فیسبوکتون کردی، بخواستم ببینم که میشه کاراتون رو، تمرین هاتون و در واقع چیزهایی رو که میتونید آموزش بدید و هر نوع محصولی که دارید و یا اجراهاتون از طریق فیسبوکتون هم تماشا کرد یا دسترسی بهشون پیدا کرد؟
بله، ما یه دونه پیج فیسبوک داریم به عنوان مکمستر ایرانیان دنس اسوسییشن که اونجا تمام رفتامون لینک یوتیوبش هستش، آپدیت از پرفورمنس هامون با دیتیل که چه پرفورمنس هایی و کجا قرار پرفورمنس داشته باشیم هستش و میتونن کسایی که علاقه دارن از همونجا با ما کانتکت داشته باشن و اگه میخوان به گروهمون جوین بشن میتونن دوباره از همون پیج برن، پیج رو لایک بکنن و تمام آپدیت ها از صفحه فیسبوک ما بگیرن و اگه که نظری دارن و یا میخوان که ما جای پرفورم بکنیم میتونن از همونجا با ما دسترسی پیدا کنن و ما حتی ویدیوهامون هم که یوتیوب هستش اگه کسی علاقه داره که نگاه بکنه میتونن بنویسن مکمستر ایرانیان دنس اسوسییشن یا بهار دنس و اونجا میتونن که رقصایی که ما قبلا پرفورم کردیم همش توی فیسبوک هستش و خیلی خوشحال میشیم که اگه بتونن فستیوال ایرانی تورنتو رو 25 جولای ملسمن سکوئر نورث یورک تورنتو بیان ببینن که خیلی خوشحال میشیم که بتونیم از همه ساپورت بگیریم.
حتما پس ایرانیای عزیز شنوندگان یادتون باشه 25 جولای تورنتو میدان ملستمن و از نزدیک هم گروه رقص بهار رو میبینین باشون آشنا میشین. مریم جان من ضمن اینکه ازت تشکر میکنم و اینکه خیلی خوشحالیم که تونستیم امروز در برنامه‌مون یه فرصتی داشته باشیم که با هم دیگه صحبت بکنیم، اگر از طریق دیگه‌ای هم هستش که کسایی که علاقه دارن میتونن باهاتون تماس بگیرن که بخوام بیان به عنوان برای ثبت نام یا عضو شدن در گروهتون، اگه راه دیگه ای هست میتونی به شنونده های ما معرفی بکنی.
حتما. من دوستم که چون من خودم هم دانش آموزم سرم شلوغه و نمیتونم سوشال میدیا رو زیاد نگه دارم، خب تلفنم بهترین راهیه که بتونم ریچ کنم کسای دیگر و همون شماره تلفنم رو میگم که اگه کسی خواست میتونه از این طریق با من تماس بگیره. شماره تلفنم هست 647
بله
855 85 70 647 855 8570.
خیلی هم عالی. حالا ما حتما در برنامه امروزمون رو که توی صفحه فیسبوکمون بذاریم حتما دوباره اطلاعات تماس شما رو هم به شنونده‌هامون خواهیم داد.
مرسی.
بازم ازت تشکر میکنم مریم جان، خوشحالم که با ما بودی و باعث افتخار ما و جامعه ایرانی هستی. امیدوارم فرصتی بشه که از نزدیک هم دیگر رو ببینین و برنامه‌های قشنگتون و اجرای زیباتون رو بتونیم از نزدیک ببینیم.
مرسی، ممنونم، واقعا روز خوبی داشتید.
ممنون، شما هم همینطور، خدا نگهدارت.
خدا. I'm Andrew Stelzer and this is Making Contact. Oakland, California is a city of pride. It only takes a second to pop the trunk. And just like that, you know it's real.
I am from here. From Oakland. 5 generations of my family have been born and raised in Oakland. So it's a city that I'm absolutely proud of. And my family still lives here.
I'll be in Oakland, California every day of my life. Bass so hard, you think I'm smoking a pipe.
I grew up on Too Short. 10 years old, I was listening to that stuff. And it did influence me, and it influenced the way I thought, and it influenced the way I acted, because you want to be cool when you're a kid. It's all about being cool. So what's the problem, officer, this time? It's having big money, being black, my crime. Or did you take me to jail to teach me a lesson? Charge me with something or just ask questions? When I was in high school, I was on the whole F the police bandwagon, even though I had never had any negative experiences with the police, but it was just the popular culture to say, hey, F the police, you know. I'm getting used to it now. Handcuffed your boy, took me straight downtown for 3 warrants. Had to catch me sooner or later, because the 5-0's always trying to jack the plan for no reason. Wasn't doing nothing wrong. Based on my need to be cool, I started going down a path when I was a young man that might have led me to encountering the police negatively, being arrested, doing really stupid stuff as a kid for the sake of looking cool.
How are you?
All right, yourself?
Doing well, thank you.
You're the cop for our area?
I'm the cop for this school.
Okay, how you doing?
I'm well. I'm Mr. Hall, Roger Hall.
I'm you Charles are? Stone.
Great cop name, if you don't mind me saying.
Thank you. I appreciate that, man. I appreciate it. It's helped me out. It's gotten some attention.
Well, this here is 82nd and MacArthur was right there. So we're up on Ney Street, which is where my school is at, where Parker Elementary is. And I'll tell you this, the reason for my presence at this school is because the neighborhood is so infested with crime. And it's just unfortunate, but, you know, that in the entire block where my elementary school is located has historically been a problem.
Papa Smurf!
Hey, how we doing?
Where you been at?
Yo, where you been?
I've been hiding.
I know.
Say what?
They closed school down Friday.
Friday and Monday.
There's been, you know, multiple people shot. You know, there's drive-by shootings more often than we'd care for. You know, major narcotics activity out of these apartments up here. Directly across from our elementary school. Where you have drug dealing and drug activity and narcotics activity, you have the potential for violence.
Did they close it down for a shooting?
15 years ago, Charles Stone became a police officer in the city of Oakland. The neighborhood he's currently assigned to isn't the area he grew up in, but it's still part of his hometown turf.
I'm off all Fridays. I don't work any Fridays.
I'm out here to do my best to try to help folks and maybe change the impression. So if that dude didn't have a good impression of the Oakland Police Department before he met me, maybe he does now.
I love you. I'm going to prove it.
It's kind of nice to be from here because I have a certain amount of pride in being a police officer in the city that I'm from and the city that my family is from.
Only 9% of Oakland's police officers live in Oakland. That's pretty low, but it's not an anomaly. Around the country, other cities, big and small, face the same challenges. In Miami, 7% of the city's police live within the city limits. In Minneapolis and Ferguson, Missouri, it's around 6%.
How do you do community policing with people who don't live in the community?
John Penny is a criminologist at Southern University at New Orleans, but he's not just an academic. He spent 16 years as a juvenile probation and parole officer, a job that took him to virtually every corner of the city he still calls home.
Normally, under normal circumstances, you protect the things that you would protect it better if you have to live in it. If you don't, then it may become just a job to you. If you live outside the city, your loyalty and dedication or commitment might not be as great.
Residency requirements, rules that required cops to live in the city they patrolled, were common around the turn of the 20th century. But they weren't originally designed to recruit dedicated cops. Descendant from English law, the requirements were a way for politicians to maintain power by doling out jobs to people living in their districts. In fact, police reformers were against the requirements because of the nepotism and corruption involved. But things turned around during the Civil Rights era, and residency requirements became a racial and economic issue. Andrew Flowers is the quantitative editor of 538.com, a data-driven news site. That's the site run by election prediction guru Nate Silver.
These residency requirement ideas were instituted in the 1970s and the 1960s out of like an environment of, you know, white flight, the middle class leaving to the suburbs.
Suddenly, the idea of mostly white police officers patrolling inner-city neighborhoods of color during the day, then escaping to their suburban communities at night, didn't sound so great.
And the motivations behind these residency requirement ideas seem sensible, right? You know, you want to keep tax money in the city. You want to improve the resident police relations.
Local governments in Chicago, Denver, and dozens of other cities have laws requiring their officers to live within city limits. Some of those laws include other emergency responders like firefighters, citing the notion that they need to live close by in case of an emergency. Other requirements, like Boston's, cover all local government employees. In practically every case, there's been resistance from law enforcement agents, who say these residency rules restrict their freedom of movement. In 1976, a Philadelphia firefighter took the issue all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Despite the fire department's residency requirement, he wanted to move out of town. But he lost the case and lost his job. The court rejected the argument that anyone had a constitutional right to be employed by any particular city. The Fraternal Order of Police, or FOP, has been a consistent opponent of residency requirements. Retired Nashville, Tennessee Police Commander Bob Nash worked with the local and national FOP.
You don't have to live in Nashville. You just don't have to be a policeman here in Nashville is kind of the philosophy of the courts. It's really not an issue that you can take to court and be successful. It's really a political issue.
In 1994, Nashville City Council voted to get rid of its residency requirement. Nash says that campaign succeeded by arguing that a larger geographic area equals a larger talent pool to hire officers from.
Say in the case of Nashville, if you lived in a bedroom community like Franklin or Brentwood or Mount Juliet, there's some very, very good candidates there for the job. Oftentimes people would get married. A wife or a husband might have property already or a home already outside the county, so that means you're going to end up having to move. So people really wanted the freedom to move where they wished and still be employed here.
When Hurricane Katrina and the floods that followed ravaged New Orleans, throngs of police and other first responders left the city, and there was a shortage of housing. So the city suspended its residency requirement. In the decades since, there's been difficulty generating a pool of qualified applicants from within city limits. So in 2014, the requirement was removed altogether.
We were, as they say, bleeding blue.
Even police reform activists like Yvette Theory didn't fight very hard to keep New Orleans law on the books.
I mean, I understand from their perspective that they were just trying to, you know, get more recruits or whatever. But being a native and someone who grew up in this city, I think residency is very important to the police department.
Theory says there's already a level of wariness about police in New Orleans. Her mentally ill brother-in-law ended up dead after a 911 call. Her son has been stopped by the police several times for what she says was driving while black.
We did a survey back in 2007 where overwhelmingly people said they didn't trust the police. That hasn't changed. People still don't trust the police. And now you're bringing people outside the community and putting badges on them. So where, you know, how the trust level going to go up when you're allowing outsiders to come in and police other people's community with no investment.
We'll be right back.
Fire!
You're listening to Making Contact. Because of generous support from listeners like you, this show is distributed for free to radio stations in the U.S., Canada, Australia, and South Africa. To find out how to support us, download shows, or get our podcasts, go to radioproject.org. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Our handle is making_contact.
There are many examples of people who you would not want to be a police officer. Everybody can think of somebody and say, would you want that guy to be a police officer? And their reaction is oftentimes an emotional one. Hell no! Right? Why is that? Because the position of police officer is one of great responsibility and trust, and easily manipulated and abused if you have the wrong people doing the job. Hey, this is my good friend. Guess what I have, my friend? Guess what I have?
Nice.
This is my pal Jeff.
How's it going?
I have what you need, bro.
Okay.
Wanna do that?
Sure.
Let's do it. Because who knows when the next opportunity we'll get.
But let me, I have half of what you need though.
I it's all good. You take these.
If you're a little confused right now, so am I. Officer Stone is getting out of his car to sell his friend something out of the trunk of his police cruiser. we're in the parking lot of a gas station right by a freeway on-ramp.
I don't even know how much. How many did you get? How many boxes did you get? Yep, you got it. 3, 3, 6, and 5. 5. Boom.
This deal being made is for boxes of Girl Scout cookies.
I love you, man. Thank you, too. Appreciate the support, man. This is from Avea.
Okay. I got it.
All right, brother.
Turns out Officer Stone helped deliver a baby in this parking lot a few years back. His wife has known the gas station owner for decades. These are hometown community connections that make locally rooted officers seem so desirable. But this conversation about police loyalty to a community in Oakland and in New Orleans and in Ferguson, Missouri, is not just about geography, it's about race.
Most urban communities are patrolled by predominantly white police officers. So the perception is that police officers, particularly white police officers, don't have a vested interest or concern about people in the communities where they patrol.
Terrence Allen is assistant professor at the University of Texas at Austin in the School of Social Work. He says the integration of police departments, which began in the 1960s, seems to have brought more psychological than statistical benefits.
When you ask black residents about their treatment from black police officers, they generally say black police officers don't treat them any better than white police officers. Then when you ask them, who would you rather patrol in your neighborhood? Well, they would rather have black police officers patrol than white police officers because, you know, it's like looking at the best of two evils, so to speak.
Oakland, like many American cities, has a police force with a disproportionate number of white officers who patrol urban communities of color during the day, then go home to the suburbs at night.
Yes, sir.
So this guy that's been graffiti in our building, I done walked all the way from West Grand. I've been following him, trying to wave down the police while he was still on my side. I got pictures of him. And it's the first time he spent a lot of money covering our building up.
What's he wearing?
All the time. He's wearing a black backpack, a black coat, a ball cap. It might be black, too. He's a Caucasian. He has the full beard, and he has glasses on.
Let me see if I can get somebody who can come by. Okay?
Okay.
1073, go ahead and state emergency.
See if we can't find this dude. That would bother me. Somebody marking up my walls all day long.
1537 23rd Avenue.
Yeah, he's in a little. He's right there with the newspaper.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can I get a cover unit to 5th and Broadway? I got a flag down about a vandal who's about to make a walk and stop. Can you just send somebody this way?
If you're from here, you have a better understanding of, from growing up in it, you have a better understanding of what's going on as opposed to somebody who comes from somewhere else and they're just looking for action.
This is Anthony Jackson, the guy who just flagged down Officer Stone for help to arrest someone writing graffiti on his store.
And I mean, when you grow up in an area, you have the potential to see what somebody's doing and go up and say, hey, young man, you know, this is what you're headed to with doing this, this, and this, as opposed to the answer being going and picking him up. If you're from that community, you may know some people that know this person, or you can bring them to that parent or to that grandparent or to that father figure or whatever the case may be and say, hey, this is what's going on. I decided to bring them right to your house. And that's kind of, to me, a more of a community approach as opposed to what's been happening, which is arrest you and hope that the incarceration process is going to allow you to restore and come out a better person. Why don't we stop it before you even get to that point? And I think part of that is what's being done in the community. And I think the best people to do something in or for their community are people that are of that community.
What Jackson just described is the archetypical version of community policing. It's almost a 1950s Mayberry-esque picture where Officer Miller tells little Johnny to straighten up or else he'll tell his grandma. It's unclear if this type of policing ever really existed, especially in communities of color. But the idea of the friendly neighborhood officer is often cited as a reason why police living locally can be beneficial.
I don't think every police officer maybe should be or should have to be necessarily from the community, but certainly if there's a certain amount of them, even when you have things that happen where we have all of this confusion behind whether police are wrongfully shooting people and that kind of thing. If there were more community officers involved, I think that that would at least lessen the likelihood of an officer going out and wrongfully attacking or shooting somebody.
There's not really any data on whether officers who are from a particular city are more or less likely to shoot a suspect. But Allen says it's not about numbers.
Perception is reality to people who are being victimized. They don't care about statistics. They only are concerned about what they perceive to be when they're victims.
Allen admits residency requirements don't help because officers all cluster their homes in one area of the city, creating a sort of safety bubble that doesn't connect them to most of the residents they serve. Still, he says racial representation is key to building trust. And that's one of the ideas behind residency requirements, that they can at least help create a police force as diverse as the citizens of the city they patrol. However, Andrew Flowers from 538.com looked at the numbers and found out that might not be happening.
Going into this study, me and the co-author thought, hey, I assume that this has a positive effect on police diversity. So it was a little surprising that the data didn't back it up.
Flowers analyzed the 75 largest police departments in the U.S. to see whether those with residency requirements had a more racially representative police force. Meaning, for example, if your city's population was 40% Black and 30% Asian, the police force would mirror those same numbers, 40% Black and 30% Asian. So, against all conventional wisdom, they found that police departments that required officers to live in the city they patrol actually had less diverse police forces.
One of the things we found is diversity does help. It seems like there is a correlation between the more diverse a police department is, there's a reduction in police misconduct, and there's more trust from the community towards the police force.
Flowers' study found that having that diversity on the police force creates a kind of institutional change.
The culture changes, right? It becomes less insular. It's open to community feedback, etc. So we found lots of researchers who had documented this relationship between diversity and better police community relations. But what we weren't able to find is research that proved that residency requirements were a way to get that diversity.
Like any good statistician, Flowers is careful to distinguish between correlation and causation. He thinks the diversity issues existed before the residency requirements. So the rules didn't cause a lack of diversity, but those requirements also didn't solve the problem or reduce the distrust. That's likely one reason that Black Lives Matter and the growing movement for police reform across the country are not prioritizing residency requirements as part of their call for change. So what can police departments do to get that diverse police force, which is clearly an asset? Flowers, along with everyone else I spoke to for this story, said the real key is recruitment.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. All right, welcome to OPD's fourth annual open house. Thank you for coming. I'm Sean Wen. I'm the chief of the Oakland Police Department. And I would real quick.
It's a sunny spring afternoon, and the Oakland Police are hosting their annual open house street fair.
So hiring locally is one of the priorities here in the police department. We've made some strides at that. But I think that if you want to attract people to come to your department, you have to have a good relationship with them. So working with the community, having events like this, all those things help with local recruiting.
Chief Wendt has gotten a lot of credit since taking over a beleaguered OPD, working to rebuild the department's reputation as fair and transparent. But recruitment of Oaklanders, or of any people of color for that matter, is still a major hurdle.
I mean, in a lot of the communities that we would want to recruit from, young people in don't necessarily want to become police officers. We are trying to get Spanish speakers, Chinese speakers, right, so we can make sure we're providing adequate service in those communities. But the largest ethnic group that we get of Oakland resident applicants are still white males, right? So, you know, it's a challenge to meet all the various priorities that we have.
Oakland Police Sergeant Mildred Oliver is at a table promoting the Police Activities League and the Explorers Program. Both are efforts to expose children to police officers and what they do, in hopes that one day some of those homegrown kids might want to join the force.
We are really truly trying to recruit an agency that's being run by the people, for the people of Oakland.
Oliver has been a cop for 18 years. She's born and raised here and is part of that 9% of the force that lives in the city.
I'm not saying that only Oaklanders can understand Oaklanders, but it gives us more credibility as a department when we can say that we go out in the community and recruit and we grow our own.
Oakland used to have a residency requirement, but in 1974, California voters amended the state's constitution, making the geographic restrictions illegal. All of a sudden, cities and counties had to allow their employees to live wherever they wanted. Today, some of Oakland's officers live more than 100 miles away. I wanted to ask Officer Stone, Oakland-born and raised, how he felt about law enforcement commuting in from the suburbs, or further, patrolling his hometown. Stone is also Black and understands the racial dynamics at play. So I was really surprised when he told me that the city of Oakland is no longer where he calls home.
I do not live here anymore.
Okay.
Moved out. I got tired of seeing people that I've arrested at my house, in front of my house.
Okay.
Gets now that I have a wife, I have three kids. Mm-hmm. It's just I don't want to see those guys. I don't want them. I don't want there to be any trail back to my home where I sleep.
Stone isn't the only cop who told me he doesn't like encountering people he arrested out on the street.
I've been followed home before. It's just it's a little frightening. And as soon as my wife and I we were able to get everything straight as far as finances. We got out.
So, like more than 90% of his colleagues, Stone left the city.
First, we moved to Dublin.
By Google Maps, Dublin is about 23 miles away from the Oakland Police Department's headquarters. In rush hour traffic, the drive could take an hour.
We lived in Dublin for 4 years, and then we found a really nice place in Walnut Creek.
Walnut Creek is one of those places Bay Area people use as shorthand for the burbs.
And we've been there for 2.5 years now. My neighborhood is purely residential, all houses. No drama, hardly any traffic. You know, it's one of those streets where if you don't know where it is, it's kind of hard to drive down it. Which is great because there's kids playing outside and everybody's got their kids on bicycles and there's. It's peaceful, which is good.
Raising kids in a safe neighborhood with good schools is cited by many officers as to why they don't want to live in the inner city. Cost of living is also a big deal. In Oakland, the price of housing has risen so much in the last decade, it can be out of reach even for relatively well-paid police.
Now, I don't mean to badmouth my city, but real is real. You know, I can't afford to move into a home in the Oakland Hills and send my kids to, you know, Joaquin Miller School or Montera, where there are even problems there. You know, it's got problems there too. Less so than in some of the other schools, but problems nonetheless that a Walnut Creek or a Pleasant Hill school doesn't really deal with.
If police officers don't want to live in the city that they're working in, I think we have a very crisis and serious situation.
Criminologist John Penny says the quality of life justification only exacerbates the divide between police and urban communities.
First of all, if you're a police officer, you don't want to live here in the city, and the people that you are supposed to be protecting, then how do you think they feel about you in terms of your attitude towards the city? Would you want to go to a hospital where the doctors and nurses say, I would never use this hospital? I know that many police officers don't see themselves as being attached to the problems of the city, and they would want to come in, perform a task, leave, and go back to their houses at night and safe. We want to be safe.